Hello, Nick.
Hi, Martin.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. You?
Excellent, yes, very good. A bit knackered, but not too bad at all.
Tired? Why is that?
Well, it's been a busy week. I've been off to Microconf, obviously, and got back on Wednesday. And a two-day week is obviously rushing to fit everything in.
Yeah.
It's the usual story of people remembering that you're back on Thursday and then on Wednesday. I was wasting the airport for the flight, and all the emails were coming in. People saying, "Oh, when you're back tomorrow, can you just do this?" When you so I had a busy day on Thursday, but no, it's all good. Revitalized from the learnings of Microconf, so that's
excellent.
Good. What have you been up to?
Well, I was supposed to go into Microconf, as you well know, because you sorted out the ticket for me.
Yep.
When I was away the day that they came on sale. But about 3 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago, maybe, I decided I probably couldn't go because I didn't have a passport at the time. And I thought getting a passport would take longer than the 3 weeks I had left before the conference.
Yeah.
And so I did successfully sell my tickets, which is good. Someone else got to go. And it ended up working out well anyway, because I had a bit of a family crisis where we had a family member end up in hospital for a week and a half,
yeah.
Which was a bit stressful at the time, but it's all okay now and they're out, which is okay.
Good.
But yeah, it's kind of a newfound, well, I wouldn't say newfound admiration, because you obviously know that doctors and nurses do a great job, but it's a long time since a family member, or I don't think I have spent any amount of time in hospital, so
yeah.
To kind of go in there and see it all. And it kind of brings home some of the stuff they say on the news around the crisis of the elderly. There were so many old people kind of going through the acute care unit.
Yeah.
And the obesity crisis as well, because there were a lot of people that were in, either because they were overweight and that being a direct issue, or, you know, because of complications of them being overweight.
But yeah.
Kind of getting to see that firsthand.
It does open your eyes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, again, they say it on the news all the time about the NHS being overstretched and stuff, and it is reconfirms the admiration for the job that doctors and nurses do under such stressful and constrained conditions.
But absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that's all worked out now, but it was a good thing that I didn't go to Microconf, because it allowed me to help out with the family stuff, so that's good.
There's nothing worse than being away when something like that's going on, is there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So go on then, tell us what you learned in Microconf.
Well, it was really good, as usual. I mean, it's my third one now, so I've never been to the one in the US, but it's the third European one I've been to. And it's interesting, because the first one I went to, I was just blown away, and it was just absolutely amazing, and couldn't get enough. And the second one, it was really, really good, but I kind of knew what to expect, so it wasn't blown away completely, but it was fantastic. And this time, again, it's been really, really good, but I felt much more comfortable with it, because...
Right.
I knew exactly what was going to go on, and so it was good. And that's quite a useful thing, actually, I think, being a bit more comfortable with it, because you can easily pick out the bits that you're interested in more than the bits you're not so interested in, you know. So that helped. There were obviously the talks were really good. Some of them weren't that applicable, I don't think, to where I am. Mainly on the second day. The second day was kind of the talks were a bit more about when you're running your business, you know, and how to keep going and dealing with the things that come up and that sort of stuff. Whereas the first day was a bit more actionable for me. Should I go through some of the things that we talked about?
Yeah. Do it.
So Justin Jackson did a talk on day one. I like Justin Jackson with his Product People podcast and the Build and Launch, I think it was called, the thing where he did a startup in 7 days. And his talk was how to acquire your first 100 customers. So I'll go through these, actually. I'll just go through some of the notes that I took. But Christoph Engelhardt. He did describe throughout the Microconf, and he does a fantastic job on the notes. So I'll put a link to the show notes. To the Microconf notes that he wrote, because that's a much better job than I'll ever do. But just to pick out the highlights that I noted down from them. So the Justin Jackson's talk, how to acquire your first 100 customers. He was talking about the sort of usual marketing, I say usual, but the marketing tactic of creating a free tool or an ebook to give away, you know, for someone's email address. So that's always a good idea. Creating an email course as well. Again, that's quite a good idea. And there's another talk later on that I'll talk about an email course. He was talking about publishing on Medium, which is something I've not looked at yet. So I've got a note down to do that, work out what that's all about. And another thing he did, which was quite interesting, was about image search on Google. So he did an experiment with a picture of him as a sort of nerdy school kid sort of thing, and he ranked number one for that image. And he said it was really quite easy to do. So that opened my eyes a bit as well to perhaps something around image search might be useful to try and get the rankings up there. So anyway, that's something I noted away. Retargeting ads as well. You know, he highlighted the fact that people don't usually buy when they first come to your website.
Yeah.
You know, and they may be too busy to come back again or remember to come back again. So retargeting is good from that point of view, that you can remind them wherever they go. It's a bit creepy in the stalker front, but
I think at the moment as well, retargeting is a lot less expensive than Google Ads, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
So
yeah.
Although you may, if you do use Google Ads, it may cost a lot for the first click. The second time you're showing the ad and the second click and so on and so forth isn't as expensive as the first one, is it?
Right, yeah.
Getting them there. So
yeah, I think that's right, yeah. I need to look into that more. Again, that's why I made a note of it. And one of the things that I thought was really good, which is obvious really, but again, that's why you go to these things, for people to highlight the obvious, it was to have a prioritized prospect list. So he said that one of the tools he's always found invaluable wherever he's been is having a list of prospects, and you put it in priority order. So which ones are the most important to you, which ones would do the best for your business, you know, prioritize them however you see fit, but then target them in that way, you know, and treat the ones in the highest priority with a bit more love and care, and try and get them on board, focus on them a bit more. So that was really good. So then Brian Castle, yep. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he did a talk as well. And his was about productizing to 10K a month. Now, productized service is something I tried before with the joined up data, and that actually is still alive, even though it's dead. And a lot of his talk, I was thinking about that and trying not to think about that, because I was thinking, yeah, I don't want to get tangled up in that again now. But I made some notes anyway in case I ever go back to it in the future. And he was talking about, you know, everyone talks about a SaaS app when you're doing an online service software. He was talking about a SWAS app, so SWAS, which is software with a service.
Yep.
So the idea is that the software provides the tool and then the service delivers the result. So with joined up data that I had, you know, I had the engine that did the work, but I had to configure it to tell it what to do, and I had to check the file that came out and then hand it over to the customer. So that's kind of the thing. The service was me doing the initial setup and then checking the document and handing it over. So that's the idea, really, is using software to do most of the work. And one of the reasons he says that he thinks this is a good way to do things is it's kind of having this done-for-you type attitude, because lots and lots of software doesn't ever get used because the customer that bought it doesn't have the time to get up to speed on how to use it.
Yep.
And so what a lot of people are looking for is this, I just want it done, you know, so the idea is that you've got the software, or you can put together a suite of software tools which you then use to provide a service on top of them. And obviously you can scale it up by standard operating procedures, outsourcing bits, all that sort of stuff. So that was quite interesting. It's not something I'm going to apply immediately, but I think that's worth having to think about. And then there was one of the attendee talks. This year at Microconf Europe, they had attendee talks the first time, and they were good. I didn't make notes on all of them, but this one stood out to me, which was Jacob Funnell, which he talked about how to write an email course.
Right.
So he was talking about what you really need to do when you're writing an email source. And these are quite good actionable tips, really, is to pick a really, really small topic and then really elaborate on it. So rather than trying to boil the ocean in an email course, just pick something really small and make sure with every email you're bringing people on a little bit, so they're learning something new or developing a micro skill, and at the end of it they should be able to do that one thing that you chose at the end of your course. So you've got just this one objective, and by doing that you can fill out the emails by really elaborating and making it absolutely crystal clear. Another tip he had was that when they sign up to the email course initially, ask them to reply, because if they reply to your email, they're then sort of mentally invested in the course, and so it registers with them a bit more. Mm-hmm. It's also quite good for spam as well, to avoid your emails going into spam. And then another tip, you get a few tips, look at the notes for more details, but one of his tips that struck a chord with me was to be personal and avoid underconfidence. So when you're writing the course, don't say things like "you might find" or "I believe that this" or "in my opinion," you know, use strong language. Yeah. That makes you confident. So that was really good. Another one from that day was Alex Yumishev from Jitbit.
Yep.
Probably butchered his surname again. Pronunciation isn't my best. So he was talking about from day job to million-dollar software company, and he's got a few products. One of them, I think the most successful one, is the help desk software. It was really interesting, actually. I mean, one of the things was that he mentioned was that he's tried loads of different marketing activities, but he tried an email course or email marketing in general. And he said, yeah, it did have an effect, but he didn't get anywhere near the dramatic results he was expecting. Because, you know, everyone talks about you've got to do email marketing. It's the best thing. And for him, and I think he sells primarily to enterprises, but he found that he didn't really have that that same impact.
Right, yeah.
And that's interesting to bear in mind, really, because, you know, it's easy to think that since everyone's hammering on about email being the best marketing channel, it might not be in your market. So you just need to bear that in mind, in the back of your mind. That was quite good to hear. So then he was also talking about the different pricing plans that you have. And he was saying he never would have a free plan, but it may be worth thinking about having a $5 a month plan, but with no features. It's basically just there, really, really limited. It doesn't do anything really, but it's there, and it's there to prevent disruption from below. So to prevent a competitor coming in with a really cheap product that does this minimal set of features. And by having that, you can help stave them off. So that was something that's quite interesting to bear in mind.
Yeah.
Always be marketing, you mentioned, and he was saying that your 404 pages and your error 500 pages are good places to market. Keep a log of everything you do. This was one of my takeaways, which was from the whole conference, actually, which was we've all got source code control on our software, and so we can always get back to various revisions and see when a bug was introduced or whatever. But I personally don't do that at all with any kind of marketing activity. Right. And he was saying a really good thing to do is keep a log of everything you do in your marketing, because then when you see in a week's time your stats go through the roof or drop through the floor, you can look back at your log and work out which change probably resulted in that happening, and then back it out or whatever. So that was one of my three takeaways that I took away from the whole conference.
I gotta say, I've been doing that for VoucherCodes Pro.
You have,
kind of from the beginning, because there's two main things that can affect your appearance and search results. Is either something that you do, like a change to the site, or you know, changing the H1 titles or something like that, or you know, there can be a Google penalty. And so you kind of want to know whether it's something you've done or whether it's a Google penalty changing their algorithm. So yeah, so we've
that's exactly the sort of thing you're talking about. Yeah, whether it's a change that you've made or something external that's made that happen. So that was good. And the final point I noted down was about monitoring the feature usage. So you need to know which features of your app your customers are using, and if they're not using something, get rid of it. If they are, and look at the ones that are getting the most use and really, really optimize them so that they're the best thing. That was good. And then on the same day, Rob Walling's talk was really good. His talks are always good, but this time it was the inside story of self-funded SaaS growth.
Yep.
And the key takeaways, it was a really good talk about Drip, really, and about how they launched it and it went pretty well to the launch list, and then it kind of started to stumble a little bit, and that was because they hadn't got product market fit. So there were some features that they didn't have that people needed, and they went through a sort of a exploratory phase of working out what it was that people needed. So they were emailing people and asking for feedback, and then they implemented this lightweight automation that doesn't suck sort of idea, and then from there got back on track and started to ramp up again. So the key points that I took down from his talk were that you need to build something that people want. So that's finding the product market fit, which you may think you've got when you launch a product, but you still have to learn and work out whether that is right. Find your position in the market. So, you know, you might be the most expensive, the least expensive, whatever, but you need to find where you fit, and then scale from there. So work on what you've got and scale up. So those are the talks that I took the most notes from. The others were mainly on the second day, which were mainly about... you know, when you're actually running your business and going through things like that. So we had Peldy from Balsamic did a great talk, really fantastic, about his experience in growing the company. You know, and there were all sorts of funny bits in that where he had, you know, he's saying, well, I tried this plan, that didn't work. I tried this plan, that didn't work. But, you know, throughout all of this, the sort of revenue and profit is going up all the way through. So I think the takeaway from that talk was that you probably won't know what you're doing as you're going through, and each time you hit a new milestone, you won't know what to do, but just keep pushing through it and keep doing the best you can, and it'll sort of work out. That was really good. Dave Collins did a talk about SEO. That was quite good. And John Edge, again, I've butchered his surname, but he did a talk about how he's a non-technical solo founder. So you can have a look at the notes. Rachel Andrew did a talk about running your business without having an exit plan. So just, you know, keeping going with it. You're not planning to sell it, whatever, all that. That was good. And then Patrick McKenzie did a talk about leveling up. So about his journey through his products up to now where he is with Starfighter. And how he's basically been killing himself working hard on that when he promised himself he'd never do that again. But it was funny. You could see him on stage and he was like a little boy, so excited with his new product that it was it was brilliant. That was quite good fun. So yeah, but I mean, as usual, the most I took out of it really was talking to people between the talks and in the evenings and stuff. It was really, really good.
So have you you got any details of people you're going to keep in contact with or track progress with?
I've got, there were loads of people. I met some people that I'd met before, you know. I'll probably keep in touch with those as I did before. There are some new people that I've reached out to or will do over the next week or so, just to try and keep in touch. I think I'm going to start a mastermind or become part of a mastermind or try and do that. There were so many people there that were in a mastermind, and some of them had met before and they'd started them since the last MicroConf, and they were all saying how brilliant they were. So, I mean, I know we've got our little chat that we have from time to time, but I think I'd want something else as well, you know. So you've got sort of multiple inputs. So I don't know. I'll try and sort something out that front. Yeah. Yeah. So it's fantastic. Really good.
So have you had any progress on the Kids Club management software as well?
Yeah. So I've now got two developers again. So I think, I can't remember where we were last time, but I think I just got rid of the developers I had and got a new guy on who was working out quite well. And I've now got a second guy on. And they're both working out really well. I was a little bit nervous about it at first, as you always are. There was a bit of them getting up to speed, but we had some really good conversations. And while I was at MicroConf, actually, on the Monday night, I had a Skype call with the both of them.
Right.
And they'd got together and discussed the project and come back to me with suggestions, you know, saying, well, no, you want to do it this way, but we think this would be better and here's why.
Right.
And it was fantastic, you know. I was just blown away with how they were coming back with really sensible stuff. So the upshot of that was that we're having kind of a few days of refactoring what was already there. Things like, it didn't have tests in before, so they're introducing tests, and the idea behind that is just to keep the development going without having to worry about testing everything functionally. You know, you can just run the tests to get a good idea about stability and stuff like that. And it also helps if you're bringing on new developers. They can either use the tests to help get up to speed, or they know they're not really broken anything too badly if they can run the tests. So that was a bit scary because I've got a lot of pressure on to deliver functionality. But at the same time, I think it will benefit us in the long term. Mm. So I said, let's take a few days and do the best we can, and then we'll...
So where are those two guys based?
They're both in Bangladesh.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, the one that I had before I went to MicroConf in the last podcast, he suggested this guy. So I just said to him, you know, do you know anybody that's good?
Yeah.
And he had this other guy. So I had I did the usual sort of Skype interview trial phase. I gave him a week, actually. I said, let's do a week and see how we go. And he turned out to be really good. So, yeah, touching wood that we're going to keep these for a good while now. So it's really good.
So what kind of end user deadlines or billing deadlines have you got anything lined up?
So the two customers I've got, one of them we talked about mid-September, which is looking a bit optimistic, but my plan is to be at least trying to get him on board. Let's say by the time the next podcast comes around, I should be getting him on board. And then the other one is end of September, and there's a bit more functionality they need. So it's going to be touch and go, I'll be honest. It's going to be hard work to get there, but I think it's possible. So I'm dispensing, cutting features left, right and centre. So all the stuff like the setup, you know, creating the company and the database, creating the users, creating the clubs, all that stuff is going to be done manually.
Right.
It's just purely the operational stuff that they need to work that we'll be implementing. And some of that won't be quite as fancy as I'd planned it initially.
Yeah.
Just to get it out the door, really, so people are using it. So, It's good. It's exciting.
And his marketing for new customers on hold as well.
On the Monday night after we'd been to the reception, I was so Matt, who listens to the podcast, hello Matt, we had a few beers on Monday night with Mike Tabor, and I was explaining to Mike Tabor about how, you know, how we've got the I've got these customers and everything, and I'd spoken to loads more and there were quite a few interested, but I've just got these two customers. He goes, well, why don't you sign up with others? I'm like, well, I've just got so much on trying to deliver to these two. He's like, well, don't you like money? And he was giving me a really hard time about why I'm not ringing up the other customers and getting them on board as well. And he's quite right. It's just, you know.
Did you ask, so how's Audit Shark?
I didn't then, actually, no. I didn't do that, no. Shouldn't I? Yeah. But, so he's right in many ways. I should be trying to sign them up so that I've got sort of a pipeline effectively. But
yeah,
it's just so much work at the moment as it is. It's difficult to make time for it. But I need to do something. I think I need to get the website up at least, because there's nothing there at the moment. Mm. And then I can start pushing people towards it. So, yeah. So that's it really with that.
Exciting.
Yeah. So what have you been up to with product-wise? And
I get was the whole family emergency thing that happened last week. Not too much, I would say.
Yeah.
But there's a few bits and pieces. It's quite interesting, actually. Well, because last week I was just, I was kind of away from Reading, back in Gloucester. And I've got to say, it's quite weird, but with the whole thing going on, it's actually like probably the best week I've had away from work in terms of not thinking about work for God knows how long. Because even when I've been on holiday, I've checked emails, you know, every other day just quickly. Perhaps I think about work when, you know, just sitting down and, you know, looking around or whatever. Because there was like so much family stuff going on and looking after nieces and nephews and visiting and that kind of stuff, it was like I didn't think about work at all.
Oh, that's good.
And so it was actually, when I came back, I was almost like at that, you know, like when you come back from holiday and you're keen to start work again. I was kind of like at that point at the start of this week.
Brilliant.
There's two things I think that could be this. It's either one, completely forgetting about work for a week and just focusing on the family stuff for a week, or the other thing is it was the 1st of September, wasn't it, this week?
Yes.
And so summer is officially over. Autumn begins. And so my usual thing of like working hard during autumn and winter and into spring and then playing a bit more golf during the summer, maybe because autumn has officially started now, the motivation has kicked in.
Maybe, yeah.
And,
maybe
and you work, need to. My hibernation period, I'm the opposite to hedgehogs. I hibernate from work in the summer, and so my anti-hibernation thing has
maybe
kicked in.
Maybe that's it, yeah. But I think there's a lot to be said about doing something that occupies your brain when you're not working. Because that really, you know, well, as long as it's not occupying your brain with work-related stuff, I think that really gives your brain a break from it all. And
yeah, because even when you're going on, or when I go on holiday anyway, even if I'm sat like on the beach reading a book or something, my mind just wanders, and it might wander about the book for a little while if it's like a fiction book.
Yeah.
But eventually everything comes back to work one way or the other, and I kind of have an idea, and I'll just jot it down in Evernote or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I want another family crisis by any means, because it was quite a stressful week last week, but you know, take the positives out of a crisis.
Absolutely,
situation,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I think that's good.
So that's good. So I think I've been working on golf.io.
Right.
And I guess this more leads down to a podcast recommendation for what people should listen to. And so I've been listening a lot to Rainmaker.fm.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Brian Clark, who did Copyblogger years ago, started Copyblogger years ago. I just want to say 10 years ago. It must be about then. And so from Copyblogger, he's, you know, launched a WordPress business where they build themes. I think they do the Genesis theme.
Oh, right.
Which is what a lot of WordPress people use. They do WordPress hosting. There's educational courses they built off the back of Copyblogger and so on. And now they're building out a new platform called Rainmaker, which, funnily enough, is based around podcasting and building digital assets. And it's basically around building an audience first, which is what we've spoken about before.
Yeah.
And so with a few of the things that I'm interested in around golf.io, I'm kind of taking this approach of putting the content on a site and trying to build an audience around, you know, my interest, I guess.
Yeah.
To see if it is possible to build an audience around it before potentially looking at how to monetize it, whether that's through selling e-commerce products, advertising. I want to stay away from. And this is one of the things that they talk about a lot on the podcast, actually, is staying away, or not doing the advertising route of actually selling either, you know, a physical product which you learn once you've got the audience. It's easier to learn, you know, what they would pay money for and what they would buy. Or a lot of the things that they talk about is around education courses again, which again around golf, it can play out in terms of, you know, golf professionals. A lot of people pay money for lessons and even instructional books. I've got a whole row of them on my shelf over there. And videos and stuff like that. So there is perhaps an educational element to golf.io. Not something I could do myself, but there's always partnering up with golf professionals as well.
Yeah.
So it's going back to the audience first thing, which is, I guess you go back to episode one of our podcast. We talk about that, don't we? So
And the 30 by 500 stuff.
But the main point of that really is to point out, if you go to rainmaker.fm, there's a whole lot of podcasts that are hosted on their platform by other people, but the main podcast that Brian Clark does is the new Rainmaker, I think it's called.
Right.
And I've been listening to the back catalogue of that, and that's really, really good. So I'd recommend that.
Have a look at that.
From VoucherCodes Pro point of view, I've been rolling back a few changes that we implemented, and actually this is interesting from the point of view of that log we were talking about, of things that we've previously done. And so, going back to November time, I think maybe last year, maybe a bit later, there was lots of speed optimization stuff I did that just hasn't had any effect, and may even have had a negative effect on in terms of using Amazon CDN. There were some hacks I did because it was difficult to store CSS files on the CDN and present. It was easy to do it on S3, their storage platform, I think.
Yeah.
But there's something to do with the max age of it and presenting the CSS file through CloudFront, which is their CDN platform, and so on. There were some hacks you could do. We got some emails from a couple of our partners saying that the website wasn't rendering correctly, even though it was Google Chrome. It was the old argument, it looked fine on my computer.
Yeah.
But just a chance of it not rendering correctly on a few things for the basics just of a CDN or a cached CSS file, I decided to roll that change back.
Yeah.
And there was some other stuff around caching of a few images we were doing, which it's lazy loading, sorry, of images.
Right.
Google, in Webmaster Tools, it has the fetch as Google part of the tool, and you can actually render it as Google now. So Google, you can see how Google sees the page. And with the lazy loading of images, Google still hasn't solved the problem of working out that that's actually an image. So it just shows up as a gray block. And so although your page will load faster, you don't get the SEO benefit of having image assets on your page and things like that.
Right.
So it is a bit of a trade-off of, you know, do you get an SEO better improvement, sorry, from speed, or is it better to have assets on the page, like images and so on? I've tried the lazy loading to speed up the page. It hasn't really had any benefit, so I've rolled that back to see whether that actually having the images on the page as static images will have a benefit. So we'll see with that.
Yeah.
But the kind of the one thing I wanted to bring up around Google is, again, still there's no... They say this Panda update has been rolling out now for over a month.
Yeah.
But there was some chat, lots of chat on Twitter from people who saw a slight improvement on their site from rolling out. It actually seemed to roll back in August 14th. So it's almost like they've been rolling this update out, then they've decided to roll it back, which they have done before. There's previous history of that.
Yeah.
But then the annoying thing is really, you know, they came out this week with a logo update.
They did, yeah.
Where they've changed the font and it's gone all plain and a bit more... I don't know how to describe the font, I'm not a designer, but it's just annoying that they're spending time on this. And we didn't talk about this last time, did we? But the announcement of Alphabet, which is kind of the holding company of all these different Google subsidiaries.
Yeah.
Whereas their key target or key, you know, well, revenue earner as well around search, you know, and, you know, the smaller businesses it affects, they're just, it's not fixed and it's still a real big issue.
Yeah.
And I've kind of thought this week around, there's lots of European antitrust stuff going on at the moment as well, isn't there? And in India as well, the Indian government are looking into some antitrust stuff with Google around them actively promoting their own content properties or whatever within search results. And it's kind of made me think, you know, this could be like, or coming up could be the point where actually Google is a bit vulnerable to, you know, someone else coming in and kind of unseating their dominance in search. It's kind of, you know, for ages and ages people have tried, such as Bing and Microsoft, to kind of unseat Google, but they failed miserably, mainly because Google has been the best solution for search for such a long time. But if they're, you know, like, I'm missing the word I'm trying to use to describe their position of what they're doing, but they're
vulnerable.
Well, they're vulnerable, but in terms of you know, injecting their ads much of the page and stuff like that, so you don't see the natural search results. They're overplaying that position so much that either the European regulators are going to step in and fine them more, which I think they have done already, you know, a couple of billion, or they're at risk of being fined, or users are going to get so fed up of seeing all of these ads that, you know, another search engine might...
DuckDuckGo might be on the app.
And then there's also the talk of Apple blocking the ads as well.
Oh, really?
So the one, you know, Apple is still pissed off, right, because Google came out with Android. They were partnered together.
That's right, yeah.
The Google CEO at the time, Eric Schmidt, was on the board at Apple.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the iPhone's doing well, and then Google go, hey, well, we're bringing out Android. And there's a whole conflict of interest. Conflict of interest, that was the word I was looking at in terms conflict of search results and them displaying their own content and so on.
Yeah.
And so the one way that Apple could get back at Google is, first of all, by building their own search engine, which some people have said they're doing through a backdoor with Spotlight, you know, when you can use on your phone and do command space. They're starting to display search result stuff.
Oh, okay.
Or related stuff, like if you search for weather, it will display in there, I think, and stuff like that.
But it's the same problem, that, though, isn't it? They're showing their own content rather than the content of the websites.
But the one thing I have seen people moaning about a lot over the last couple of weeks is, you know, when you go to a web page and there's all the tracking cookies and stuff like that.
Mm.
And although I may include, say, use Google Analytics, for example, I only reference one JavaScript file, don't I? But it could, in the background, reference another 25 JavaScript files. And so a lot of people, I saw him talking a couple of weeks ago, were saying, you know, you visit one site and the amount of external calls these media sites are making to all these different tracking sites and advertising sites to track, whereas you visit all these different places and so on. You know, there's the choice, you know, that people have of blocking these ads. There's been ad blockers for years, haven't there? I'm going off on a bit of a rant now.
That's all right.
There's been ad blockers for years, haven't there, in terms of you can get them for Chrome and Firefox as add-ins and stuff.
Yeah.
But if Apple, for example, wanted to piss Google off, or other people that rely on this advertising income, which is what Google rely on for, say, 90% of their revenue, you know, if they decided whatever to block these scripts through Safari, which is on the iPhone and tablet and stuff, you know, that would make a... They don't need to invent another search engine to rival Google if they cut off, you know, a big chunk of their revenue.
That's true, yeah.
So perhaps Google are in a bit more of a vulnerable position than, you know, we thought possible, because they've had such a dominant, you know, on search for so long.
The trouble is that it's still the best search, even with all the crap, because, you know, I've tried DuckDuckGo for a while, and it may be great for the US, but in the UK, I've had trouble with it, just not bringing back the right results, basically.
Right.
Bring back US-based results rather than UK or whatever. I don't know if that's got any better, because I haven't tried it for about 6 months, but that was always a problem. And Bing, you know, I mean, the might of Microsoft behind Bing, and they've
the amount of money they pumped into it. And
So it's going to be difficult to see how anyone can really compete with them.
Yeah.
Maybe it just takes a long time, but...
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll just have a really sort of disparate market of lots of different search engines all doing reasonably well, but no complete leader.
Hey-ho. But other than that, I guess I'll start a little side project.
Oh, another little side project.
Yeah. I'd actually started this last time we did the podcast, but I didn't want to speak about it. So I read a lot of books, and I've with my friend Fleming, that you know well as well, we tried to do a startup around books many, many years ago called Connect Via Books. But I kind of started this process with that as a kind of, this is a marketing effort, but then stopped for various reasons. So asking three people, well, so there's two things that I'm trying to solve, right? So when I'm looking for a new book, Amazon annoys me with their whole machine learning type thing. So you can go to Amazon, you can get book recommendations and so on. They generate these through your previous purchases and what you've looked at.
Yeah.
But what annoys me is, say, for example, 3 months ago, I bought a book on juicing because I was trying to get more vegetables and fruit into me and so on. Because I bought one book, it's now recommending me like the first 20 books or whatever, whenever I go to the thing, are all based around juicing.
How many books about juicing do you need?
Well, exactly. And we all know, for in this particular example, everyone buys a juicer, uses it for 2 days, and then puts it in a cupboard and forgets about it for the rest of their life anyway.
Well, they should do.
And how many books on juicing do you need as well?
Yeah. Right? They should advertise, you sell it via Amazon. Yeah. Sell your juicer via Amazon. There you go.
So there's that problem. And then so I get recommended crap a lot of the time. The second issue is around reviews on Amazon. And so now authors know that if they've got a new book coming out, they'll basically give it to all of their mates. They'll give them the review copies and say, you know, the week before it comes out, can you go on Amazon and leave me, you know, a review? They need to get a certain number of 5-star reviews, 100 reviews to game the system to get into the top 10 books or whatever.
I'm seeing a lot of people as well. Well, not a lot of people. There's a couple of books I've heard of that people are launching, and they've given the launch date and said, sign up to my email list because for the first week it'll be free.
Yeah.
So I guess for the first week they get all these downloads and hit the bestseller list on Amazon. Yeah. And then there they go.
So I don't trust the reviews. I get fed up from time to time of the Amazon recommendation system. And so, as I did previously, what I started doing is just emailing people that I follow on Twitter, read their blogs or listen to their podcasts and say, you know, what are the three most influential books on either your career or life, or which are your three favourite books or books that you recommend the most to other people or gift or whatever. They reply with their email with a sentence or two about each book, ideally, and just putting up a blog post for them. And so I think I tried this idea, or I wanted to do this idea ages ago, but someone had registered the domain 3goodbooks.com. But I searched for it like 3 weeks ago and it was available. So I was like, right, it's the time to do this project again. And so I've been putting it up. I've been getting, it's cold email in these people. I know some of them. Don't know most of them. But yeah, I'm getting about 50% response at the moment.
It's really good.
Putting up some good posts. It's relying on Twitter traffic, so when I put the post up, I'll email them back and say, look, put your post up with the recommendations. Right, do you mind giving it a tweet? So they help with the marketing as well, in effect. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much traffic. So that you can see on Google Analytics, there's a bump in traffic to the site when they put the tweet out. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether a sustained traffic can be built up from just people tweeting out every now and again.
Yeah, that's interesting. That'll be interesting to see.
I want to get to the point of trying to do, you know, a new post every day. So three new recommendations every day.
That'd be good.
Yeah, we'll see what it is. But it's, I mean, it's been good for me because I've got some book recommendations from the people I've emailed already.
Yeah.
And bought a couple of the books and stuff. And they're kind of books that Amazon would probably have never recommended to me through their machine learning algorithm. So
yeah.
And personal recommendations, I still, well, I would trust more than an Amazon recommendation, I think.
I agree, yeah, definitely. So you're going to, see, I'm thinking now, you could turn it into something like Product Hunt for books.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Well, so so what I'm planning on doing is, so at the moment I just create a blog post for each person that's sent through the three books. But eventually I want to create a page for each book as well and combine the different comments from each person. So, that, you know, there's lots of things you can do.
Yeah, yeah, that's good, cool. And that sort of user-generated content is really good. There's a guy I met at MicroConf, Ed, from London, I think. Yeah, Ed, he's got a website that does timelines. And he's been running it, I think he said it, for 4 years now. And he's got a way of monetizing it through subscriptions as well. But he's also got ads on there that makes him money.
Right.
And it's his full-time gig.
So this is, first of all, it's scratching my own itch. So I'm getting book recommendations from people I respect and follow and stuff like that. And hopefully it might be useful to other people. So we'll include a link to it in the show notes, I guess.
Sounds good.
Cool. That's it for me.
Cool. Okay. Well, the only other thing, before MicroConf, I had a bit of a holiday. So I took 4 days with Silvana and Lois. And that was really good. Barcelona is a really nice city, really good city.
Yeah.
So we had a good laugh, ate lots of tapas and drank a few cervezas. And yeah, it was good. It's a bit difficult dragging a 7-year-old around on a city break.
Yeah,
you know, when you go and do something, she loves it for about 5 minutes, then it's like, I'm bored. Why are we walking so far? So that was a bit tough, but yeah, we had a good time all the same. And the other thing is, I've booked a half marathon.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well done.
The 11th of October in Henley, the Henley half marathon. So, ironically, I haven't been for a run for a week and a half. I booked it the Wednesday before I went to MicroConf. Well, before I went to Barcelona. And I'd been for a run that day, and it occurred to me, I was out running, that I need to book something soon or else they'll all be gone.
Yeah.
And I saw this one come up in October. I thought, yeah, I'll do that. And now I'm behind on my training already.
Yeah. I need to start training now for the London Marathon for next year, don't I? So
yeah.
I was doing well. I was going to the gym, actually, 3 times a week. I'd done that for 2 weeks, so whether you class that as doing well or not, I'd class that as doing well. But then obviously I was away for all of last week back in Gloucester, so it's that thing of getting back into it. Just going once again, just to kickstart the habit.
That's it. I need to do that. I'm going to have to go tomorrow morning, I think. I'm just going to go up early tomorrow and go for a run. Otherwise, it'll be too long and it'll just get too hard.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Martin.
Cheers, then.
Bye.
Bye.